you like this episode, please subscribe, share with others, rate and review so we can continue to bring you great programming.
Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I'm your host, Nikki Desai. Very happy today to be speaking with Nikki Renard. Nikki is the Public Relations Director for Who Lives. How are you, Nikki?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on this Saturday morning.
Yes, Saturday morning. Thank you for joining me on this Saturday morning. I'm looking forward to this conversation. First, can we talk about Who Lives? What is Who Lives?
Absolutely. So Who Lives is really an acronym for Water, Health, and Opportunity. And it started way back in 2010. So we've been around for about 12 years now. And Who Lives' mission is to eradicate the scarce and contaminated water issue, and also to free women and girls from water slavery and water poverty.
Okay, so before we go on, please define that for me. What is water slavery and water poverty?
Women and girls spend the majority of their time fetching water from long distances. And because of that, they don't have the opportunity to go to school or to create their own businesses. They are spending the majority of their time doing that because water is life and water is essential. And oftentimes when they go to fetch the water, they're not only encountering animal predators, crocodiles, hippos, they're encountering sexual predators as well. And so our mission is to stop that by drilling clean water boreholes or wells in these developing countries with our partner, the Village Drill, which is a human-powered drill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. So the Village Drill, that's a separate entity that does the drilling?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, we partner with them, and the Village Drill is currently in 37 countries. We have 127 drilling teams, wow, and we're drilling about 3 boreholes a day. So over 9,000 boreholes have been dug with our Village Drill, and we guesstimate about 9 million people have clean water because
of this
innovative tool.
That's amazing. That's actually much huge. That's huge. I'm kind of shocked. My jaw just hit the ground. That's fantastic. Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. There are too many things I want to ask you. How did the Village Drill get created, and what are you currently working on?
Sure, I'd love to tell our story. It really began in 2007. My oldest son, he's 34 now. He was a missionary in the Kenya, Tanzania area for 2 years. And during that time, they had a lot of political unrest. And I know from the news outlets that it was pretty extreme. He was experiencing things that he wasn't writing home to mom about. And because of that, I determined that I had to go back and experience what he had experienced. And so we did a trip 6 months later with my husband, another son who was 14 at the time. And we spent 3 weeks in Kenya and Tanzania. And while we were there, we were just shocked at the extreme poverty of the countries. We have been world travelers, but this was different. And we noticed everywhere that girls were carrying jerry cans on their heads. And it was even in the major cities like Arusha, Tanzania, they were carrying water to go to school with. The schools didn't even have water. So when we returned back home to the States, we decided as a family that we could help, we could do something. And my husband noticed that a local university here, Brigham Young University, was doing a brick making project. And so he called and left a message and then forgot about it. And 2.5 months later, Don woke up in the middle of the night with a vivid dream that made him jump out of bed. And he immediately sketched the vision that he had seen on a piece of paper. And my husband has a background in finance. We have mortgage companies, Century 21 real estate. But he wasn't sure exactly what he had drawn, but he knew that it was important enough that it was imprinted in his mind and his heart. The very next day, when he got a call from Brigham Young University saying, "This is the Capstone Engineering Program. Do you have a project for us?" And at first he was startled to receive that call, not remembering that he had called before, but somehow his number had made it onto the top of the desk. And he said, "Yes, you know, I do have a project, but you're going to think I'm a little crazy because I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I think it's a human power drill."
I'm not sure, but yes, that's hilarious.
Yes. And so he presented it to the students, to the professor. It took a full semester of the students working on it. They kept coming back with different designs, different experiments. And in fact, there's a wonderful YouTube video. If you Google BYU and Village Drill, there's, when trending wasn't popular, this is a video that trended in 2010.
Wow.
And yeah. And so 2 weeks before the end of the semester, my husband gave his football talk. He used to be a football coach. "Come on, team, let's go." And they sent him a CAD drawing. And when John opened that email and looked at the CAD drawing, he started to cry.
Wow.
It was so emotional for him because it was exactly what he had dreamed. Mm-hmm. And that first drill went to Tanzania. That first drill is still in operation, which is crazy. It looks pretty battered. I don't know if you can, this is a podcast, not a thing, but for Mickey, you can see that poster behind me. That's the number one village drill.
Wow.
And since then, it's been modified 3 or 4 times. It's got a diamond drill bit on it now. It's got a thrust on the top for impact. And that started our new journey of nonprofit work and who lives in the village drill. Completely changed our life.
That is just fantastic. That is okay. So I just, from a geeky point of view, I have to ask, how far down are you drilling to find water?
So
I mean, clearly the water must be there, right? Otherwise,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're drilling down to the aquifers. They're passing the groundwater, getting right to that aquifer that's unlimited supply of water. And they're averaging about 50 to 150 feet. Our village drill can drill up to 250 feet through all water-bearing rocks. It cannot drill through volcanic rock. Hmm. So it has to be a water-bearing softer rock. Yeah.
Right. Softer rock. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. So that's the story. And because of that, I went back to work for 10 years for the county because we needed health insurance and we have 6 children. And I was scared out of my pants, honestly, Mickey, to start a nonprofit and have a lifestyle change. But now I'm on board as the public relations director and I love it.
Very cool.
About 3 years now. Yeah.
So just real quick to look at the big picture before we look at issues of nonprofit management, which we like to talk about here on the Snapcast. But this is you've named something called the World Water Crisis. And what does that mean? What is the World Water Crisis?
Well, the United Nations says that over 3.4 million people suffer from scarce and contaminated water. Well, actually, they say over 1 billion suffer from that and over 3.4 million suffer from water-related illnesses. So we know there's lots of diarrheal illnesses, you know, typhoid, cholera. So it's still, even all these years and the billions of dollars that the UN have put into the program, there's still a huge crisis of people not having access to clean water.
Okay. I mean, that is pretty big, especially amongst developing countries. I know this, having traveled to India a few times, and I see some similar things there. This is very exciting. So let's move to the thing that you and I originally talked about when we first met on the phone, I guess it was, which is a community funded loan program that Who Lives is now doing. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yes, absolutely. So Who Lives changed their focus. We don't just give away boreholes or wells anymore. We don't do that anymore. We really want to elevate the people out of poverty and help them to be self-reliant. So this is a big task to change hundreds of years of thinking of just giving things away. Now we actually have the communities pay back either a loan or a grant that we give to them. And right now we have about 15 communities participating as of the first of the year. And it's going spectacular. We have over 85% payback rate of the loans already. So what that entails is that when you drill a well or a borehole, it causes a lot of attention. All the community leaders, all the children, everybody come out to see what's going on. Mm-hmm. And then it also causes jealousy because other communities are interested in their own. How did you get this? We want our own, you know. And so when the community can say, hey, we're paying for this ourselves, then those jealousies are gone. And it becomes such a different relationship. We just experienced this. In fact, I just barely got home less than a week ago from Kenya, where we had four different ribbon cuttings on new community-funded boreholes. And so what we do, we send the communities, you know, because you can imagine all day long, I get emails and Facebook messages, come donate to us, we're impoverished, you know, whatever. And I understand, and I have an empathetic heart, you know, it really gets to me. But when we say, here's an application, fill it out. And in that application, I'm asking them specifically, how many families will this serve? How many boreholes do you need? How long do you have to walk to water? Because we won't consider them unless they walk at least 30 minutes to water, you know, which is not very far at all compared to others that walk up to 3 miles. You know, we're asking them, how could you earn money with access to clean water? What kind of jobs could you do? We're asking them, how would your expenses be lowered by having clean water? And making them really think about it, that, you know, health, missed days from work, missed days from schools, opportunities, you know, gets them really thinking. And we always do this with in-country people. So we contract out with in-country people with our village drill teams and other nonprofits that have purchased the drill. And so it's not us. And we never put a name or a plaque on a well ever, because it belongs to the community. And when the community owns it, we employ local members to work the team. The drilling team, they learn how to fix it, you know, if they need a replacement part, and they'll defend it to the end. They'll protect it and defend it to the end. They won't let they won't let it go derelict.
My counterpoint argument here, just because I like to toss the devil's advocate's position from time to time, is absolutely, doesn't putting those questions up like, you know, can you support yourself? Can you buy this thing? Doesn't that sort of become a gatekeeping device? And doesn't that slow down the spread of being able to provide people with drills?
Well, that's a great question.
It may not be a fair question.
But actually, so one thing that we do as well is we provide a project with their well. So we also bring impact mission groups there 3 times a year. So in this last group, we actually built a cow shed and provided a pregnant cow to a girls rescue center of 78 girls. Now, this will help them to have not only fresh milk, but it's going to have a baby. They're going to get some meat. They can sell it. You know, we'll provide a project like a chicken house or trees. We're doing garden towers, which can feed 2 to 3 families a week, you know, for up to 10 years.
Wow.
And so we're explaining to them, you know, this is how you're going to elevate yourself out of poverty. And it is just spectacular because, and even like the Girls Rescue Center, I mean, they're only paid $400 of their well, because their story is so horrific, it just curls your toes. Mm-hmm. You know what's happening to these girls to make them come to the center. But they have never missed a payment. They're paying $40 back a month for 10 months. And just the pride and ownership.
Yeah.
I've got all kinds of videos. They have showers now. It's the first time the girls have ever showered.
That's
it's
crazy.
Fantastic.
That is great. That is great. I mean, and I know it's not a very fair question because I think you're absolutely right. Community investment is definitely a way more healthier solution than just showing up to say, hey, let's drill you a well. I think that's absolutely the right way to do it. But the counterposition is if your objective is to simply get more water to more people, then why put up the criteria? I think that's the right way to do it.
Absolutely. And when we contract with these teams, like we have a team in Uganda, Subi, we contract with them. You know, when they collect their repayments or loans, you know, we don't have to give them very much money because they pay it forward to the next project and then the next project. And so they are just killing it, actually. They have probably dug 40 plus, at least 45 wells this year already. Mm-hmm. You know, we see that we do WhatsApp. And so they share updates all the time, and it's fantastic.
It is fantastic. So Nikki, let's talk about from a management perspective, what are your biggest challenges running this nonprofit overseas like that from here?
So the biggest challenges right now are that just bringing donors into our cause, first of all. So we have a projects page on our website. We just discovered our website was too outdated. So we are starting from scratch this week with a new developer. And so that's a huge job. So you need to be current and you need to show exactly where dollar for dollar is going. Mm-hmm. I've made it a point to be absolutely current on all charity platforms, 100%, like Charity Navigator, GuideStar, Handage, because donors need to know how much, you know, is going to administrative and to projects. Another thing is our international community cannot text to donate to us. So we use MobileCause text to donate platform. And so we have a hard time reaching the international community. They'll like maybe send a check in the mail or something, but so that's an issue that is really hard to solve as well. Also, you know, we use World Remit and M-Pesa to pay our drillers, to contract with them. And, you know, that's hard too. Also shipping costs, DHL has more than doubled their shipping costs. It's crazy right now with inflation prices. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're struggling with some challenges with that. Marketing, we've never had a budget to market before. Last year was our first year. We had over $1 million on our books. And so there's only been 3 of us and now there's 5 of us.
That's fantastic. And I think, you know, to answer the earlier question, it's always sort of a hotly debated thing, the issue of overhead. And I cringe when I use the term overhead because you have to spend money to make good things happen. You just have to. And a lot of people, a lot of funders, I think, don't understand what that means. There's that unspoken expectation that anyone who works in the nonprofit sector should also be living in poverty. I'm like, no, that's not right. Make your people comfortable so that they can make other people comfortable.
I agree 100%. Yeah. If we were burnt out, we could not do this. We could not do this at all.
Right. So Nikki, we're rapidly running out of time here. Okay. So how do people find you? How do they, because I like the phrase you use to bring donors in. I think that's what you said. How do we bring donors in? How do you do that? And how do people learn more about Who Lives, and how do people find you if they want to talk to you?
Well, absolutely. We are on all the social media platforms, and Who Lives is WHOLIVES. And it's on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook. We're exploring TikTok. I need to hire a 20-something to get that going for me. And you know, our website shows all of our projects. We have text to donate. You can text Who Lives or drill to 71777. And you can always call me. I mean, just look at the website that we're creating brand new, and it's got our 800 number. I love to talk to people, and I mean, that's my happy place, really.
That's fantastic. So it's www.wholives.org. And Nikki, thank you for taking the time on a late Saturday morning to do this with me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
This has been The Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.
The Snapcast is a production of the Nonprofit Snapshot. Please visit us at nonprofitsnapshot.org to learn more about our consulting work and the ways we can help your organization continue to make the world a better place.